Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the FSP Crew Show. Sorry for the delay. Had some technical difficulties. We got a great show in store for you tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to Jeff and me, and hopefully, not hopefully, but and occasionally, other people call in and we'll be listening to them. Like I said, this is week five in fantasy football, and it's also another bye week is in place. So, without further ado, let me bring in my co-host who's been sitting there patiently wondering what the hell was going on. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Jerry, what's going on?
Nothing much, man, nothing much. Week five, thanks a lot for the loss there, Jeff. I appreciate that.
Hey, that's what friends are for.
That was a point, I think, 3 or 0.2 loss, something crazy. I hate those, but yeah. It is what it is. A loss is a loss. Doesn't make a difference whether it's by a point or 100 points. Still a loss.
Well, the only thing is sometimes points, total points, can be a tiebreaker sometimes for playoffs. So, mm-hmm. you know, you always want to make a good effort. You know, the only thing worse than a close loss is a high-scoring close loss, because that drives you nuts.
Yes, it does. All right, without further ado, let's get into it. All right, the first thing I want to talk about is I saw an article. Right now, we got Thursday Night Football. Maybe we'll delve into that, because that's going to be starting shortly in about a half hour or so. And we got a matchup. And it's supposed to be a nice rainstorm, and it's raining now in Lambeau Field in Green Bay. Quite naturally, the Green Bay Packers are hosting the Minnesota Vikings without their number one pick, who's got a bum ankle. And lo and behold, the ugly quarterback raises his ugly head again. Christian Ponder is going to be the starting quarterback tonight. Going up against Aaron Rodgers and company in Lambeau Field. For those fantasy football players that either the daily ones or the ones that are playing from the throughout the season, Christian Ponder will not. Let me put it this way: if you're a wide receiver and it's a rainstorm, I feel for you. If you're Minnesota, because Christian Ponder does not have a strong arm as it is. And with a slick ball in the rain in Lambeau, if you're not the slot receiver or the tight end, him passing you the ball is going to be an adventure. In my opinion, Jeff, I think this is a run-oriented, especially for the Minnesota Vikings, especially when Christian Ponder is the starting quarterback. It's going to be run, 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 Asiata and McKinnon as much as they can to keep the ball out of Christian Ponder from passing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the obvious logical thing. But sometimes, that's not what you always see, usually not that often this early in the season you talk about weather, but it could affect games. It could affect fantasy numbers. And Bridgewater isn't even suiting up for Minnesota. They had to activate a guy from the practice squad. So if the Packers, if they blitz a lot with Ponder, and believe me, when Ponder, the last time he played Minnesota, I think he got sacked 7 times or something like that. If Ponder gets roughed up, then they'll have to put in a guy just promoted from the practice squad, and that could get real ugly.
Oh, that could get real ugly real quick. But like I said, for those who have Matt Asiata or McKinnon, that's a different story. That means they'll get the ball more, and that means opportunities for fantasy points. So one way or the other, I think, whether it's Ponder or whoever else jumps in there in the quarterback position, this is going to be, in my opinion, even though it's up against the Packers, and the Packers are notorious for scoring a lot of points, but on Minnesota's end, I think they have no choice but to try to run the ball, keep the ball away from the Packers, and hope to have a close game and try to pull it out in the fourth quarter. If they try to, quite naturally, they can't go head to toe to toe with them. That's not going to happen. They can't do that. So on Thursday night, and Jeff, I want you to give your expertise on whoever you want to talk about, fantasy-wise, on both teams, who you should play and who you shouldn't play tonight.
Who you should play, who you shouldn't play. A lot of times that varies on the league, because, a real superstar, you're going to start in any format. But some marginal team guys, you'll start in some formats, but not others. I'm starting at Asiata in one league. I mean, I'm not very impressed with him, but he does get a sufficient number of carries and a fair number of touchdowns. McKinnon might be the better long-term prospect. I think the Green Bay defense is a very good start tonight because it could get real sloppy out there, and also because of the quarterback situation in Minnesota. It's tough. Like, if you have Rodgers, which I don't have him, you hate to sit him, but maybe if you got a good backup like a Phillip Rivers or somebody like that, maybe you might want to sit Rodgers. And then the same would apply to some of the stud Packers, Nelson and Cobb and Lacy. And Lacy, like a lot of the other star running backs, has gotten off to a very slow start this year. And that's been driving people nuts, including me. But at least that, if you got one of those guys, there's a lot of other guys, on other teams who got off to the slow start. We're talking, first-round running backs. Peterson is suspended. Jamal Charles has been hurt. Lacy and McCoy haven't played well. These guys, you still got to start them. They're going to improve. The one guy who I wasn't taking in the first round is playing great, DeMarco Murray. But, he's an excellent running back. I don't think anyone ever doubted his talent. His only knock on him, and it's an important knock, was his durability. And I'll tell you, very impressed with the offensive line in Dallas. And it's taking pressure off of the passing game, and it's also taking pressure off of their defense. And if they can keep running the ball the way they are, they might actually get to the playoffs and maybe win a game, which is almost unheard of. So, yeah, the new and improved
almost
Dallas
unheard
Cowboys.
Of?
Yeah.
It's unheard of. I can't remember what year it was, but that's the first one they won, first playoff game they won in since 90, 6-7, something like that, some crazy.
Yeah.
Some crazy. Yeah. That makes no sense. But the other news, Jeff, I want to talk about is one of the greatest franchises dating back is once again, looking for a head coach. I forget the exact number of coaches they've had in the last 7 years, give or take. It's absolutely absurd. I'm talking about the Oakland Raiders, who fired Dennis Allen, and I can't believe it. You know, this is a case, Jeff. Like I talked about Norvell Turner, I can't stand him as a head coach. He's one of the best offensive coordinators going, especially tutoring a quarterback. But this guy that I'm talking about now, who's the interim head coach at Oakland, is a horrible coach, and they make him the interim head coach. Oh, my God. I can't believe Tony Sperano is able to he must be have a gift of gab. He must have a golden tongue can talk his way out of a paper bag in order for him to get this job over the and I forget the other two guys' names, but to get this interim job against a hapless team. And the fact about it, I'm going to ask your opinion about that and also about Rick Gannon. I don't know if you heard about this. He absolutely ripped the organization, told them they're a bunch of losers, and that everybody in that organization is stealing money and they need to give their checks back. They should be ashamed going to the bank to cash their checks because they've done nothing for so long. And it's like stealing money. I don't know if you heard about that, but give me your thoughts on Sperano as the interim head coach, and also Rick Gannon blasting the organization.
Well, Sperano, maybe he's connected. Maybe he knows somebody. You know.
Right.
I've heard similar comments as to what Gannon made, and Gannon was kind of symbolic of the, Raider resurgence in the late 90s because he was a veteran quarterback and they brought him to Oakland and he played terrific. I think he was already in his mid-30s at that point. And I think that's, it was probably, that was definitely the best part of his career because, he bounced around with, mixed success before that. And mm-hmm. the thing is, and you remember a little more than I do, but since I started watching football, in the earliest was mid-70s. But, yeah, I was real little. But, the Raiders were a top team, and they won a Super Bowl in the 70s. If the Steelers and the Dolphins weren't so great, dead enough talent, they could have won more than one. But then they also won, I think, in 1980 and 83. And by the late 80s, they really had declined. I think the late Al Davis kind of got distracted with all his lawsuits and whatnot and moving the franchise and all that stuff and maybe wasn't paying as much attention to the X's and O's. And since the late 80s, the only time the Raiders have been great was when John Gruden was the coach and Bruce Allen was the GM. And, they got them back to the Super Bowl, actually, at that point, it was Gruden had already left. But it was pretty much the same team with Callahan as the head coach, which they didn't bother to change any of the offensive terminology, and it didn't occur to anybody during mm-hmm. the 2 weeks of practice. And I think in the NFL, coaches are always they're frequently going against former teams. Players are frequently going against former teams. Most of the time, it's a wash. You know them, they know you. It's not a big thing. But the Raiders got decimated in that Super Bowl, and then the next year, same old Raiders. Age and whatever hurt them. And I'll tell you, they were known for bringing in guys who didn't fit in with other teams who were, you know, usually more conservative, and they'd bring these guys in, you know, guys like, you know, John Matuszak and Lyle Alzado and Ted Hendricks and, you know, and so many guys, and they just fit right in with the Raiders. And this was before there was real NFL free agency. I mean, there was trades back then, and if a guy got cut, you could sign him, but usually good players don't get cut. I mean, they
right.
got even, you know, in the 80s, they got Todd Christensen off the scrap heap. He got cut by the Giants, who at the time were awful. And he was playing fullback back then. You know, he's a very good receiving fullback and, you know, pretty good ball carrier. He had been a second-round pick with Dallas and didn't work out there. Didn't work out with the Giants. The Raiders move him to tight end, and boom, becomes one of the best in the NFL for the 80s. But then, I don't know. I maybe the game passed by Al Davis, or he was distracted. But believe me, he was. You know, he had coached the Raiders in the early 60s, and he was running the team for many years. And now his son is doing it, and you know, at least. Even when he was older, Al Davis kind of, you know, still had earned respect. And you know, does anybody respect Mark Davis? I mean, at least Al Davis knew what was going on. I mean, does Mark Davis know anything? I'm really unsure because the thing is with Dennis Allen, I mean, yes, the record's been atrocious, but I don't think he's the one drafting the players. And their last, I think, 2-3 drafts have been horrible. So in NFL football, I don't think a head coaching change during the middle of the season can accomplish much because it's still the same players. But this is, you know, the Raiders have been in shambles for years. And, I mean, I've heard because of an organization, they don't attract a lot of top coaches. And if when they do bring in free agents, they're not – They're overrated, past the hill, you know, whatever, you know, over the hill, whatever. I mean, a classic example was Warren Sapp. They brought him in way past his prime. And I even admitted, you know, says, hey, I'm here to CTC, collect the check, which, hey, you know, there's nothing
right.
wrong with that as long as you earn it. But, you know, you throw money at over the hill guys or mediocre guys, it's not going to make them great. And, you know, they keep doing it. I mean, actually, James Jones has actually played fairly well considering that offense. But with all due respect, he's not a star receiver. He's good. He's not a star. You know, Justin Tuck, maybe he's a little past his prime. And but they don't do well in the free agent market. They don't do well in the draft. So, you know, what's Dennis Allen supposed to do? And then maybe at the end of the season, they'll get rid of Reggie McKenzie, who has not done well as a GM. And it's just, you know, when the Raiders are playing well, it's because they're such a historic franchise, it kind of makes the NFL a little more fun and a little more interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's bring in my other co-host from the nation's capital. Mr. Mike Wright. What's up, babe? How you been?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, Black.
Hey, yep. Joseph, let me apologize to you, my friend. I was ribbing you for leaving Eli on the bench with his 40-point serving, man. And you still pulled out the victory. Congrats,
yep.
my friend. Congrats.
Hey, thank you. And, you know, this is one of the things about Thursday night games, but I'll be honest. You know, nobody's psychic. If I was psychic, believe me, I would have started Eli in the 40 points. But, you know, I like Nick Foles a lot, which he didn't have a great day Sunday. And I think now a lot more people are going to start Eli. But based, you know, hindsight's 20/20. And the Giants offense, who looked pitiful the first two games, finally got off the schneid. You know, it's one of those things. I almost wish I could trade Eli, but the trades are tough in that league because of the roster maximums. So, you know, it's good to have a good backup quarterback, you know, in case your number one guy gets hurt in the bye week. And, you know, you keep the points off of someone else's roster. So, you know, it's okay.
Well, let me tell you something. In one of my leagues, and I couldn't believe this guy's doing this, this guy is offering up Drew Brees on a trade. He's got two quarterbacks on his roster, Drew Brees and Eli Manning. So he's willing to...
Hello?
Guy wants to go with Eli Manning and trade away Drew Brees. Now, he doesn't have that bad a lineup, but he is willing.
Oh, boy. It's always this again.
It's a 14-team league, and the things are pretty tight, especially in the running back position. And when you get that big 14 teams, the running back wide receivers out there, and he got running backs, and he's looking for a running back and a wide receiver, a number one running back, and I think a number one wide receiver for Drew Brees, and he's never going to get it. So, in my opinion, he's never going to get it, not for me. I that's just to say, you know, because he happens to be a Giant fan, he happens to see Eli playing well for the last 2 weeks, so he's going to jump on the train. And push his chips all in, a Jim Fossil type, push his chips all in the center of the table and roll with Eli Manning over Drew Brees. Don't understand his philosophy, but that's what he wants to do. I don't get it, but because. Just as quick as Eli had those two good weeks back-to-back and he had two bad weeks beginning of the season, he can revert back to bad weeks real quick. So we'll see what happens. I mean, hopefully Eli plays well, but you never know. You never know. And just like everybody jumped on Kirk Cousins, and he tanked it the next game when everybody decided to run to the waiver wire and pick him up if he wasn't there, if he wasn't on their roster already. And they picked him up, what happened?
So funny? You know what's so funny about that? I talked to my opponent who was starting Kirk Cousins, and I said, why would the coach leave him out there after the third interception? Why not bring in Colt McCoy? He wanted to see five interceptions from the starting quarterback. It made absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, you're right, what? Black. I don't know why after the third one, you think he's going to get any better from that. I mean, you know, he was getting hammered, and he was also throwing picks like he was giving them out like Christmas presents. So, you know, it's we're lowly guys. We're not getting paid millions of dollars to make million-dollar decisions like some of these head coaches that are supposed to be experts in their field and leave their – obviously, when you're looking at it, leave their player in, regardless if it's a quarterback or defensive player, running back, wide receiver, when they're absolutely horrible and yanking them and putting somebody else in to take a shot and see if they're going to do any better. They'd rather leave him out there and screw up, and at the end of the game in the press conference, say, oh, he had a bad game, he'll come back next week. When you absolutely leave, when you leave a guy out there for so long, for too long, right away when he starts screwing up and he can't seem to stop the bleeding, and the coach doesn't pull him out, his confidence can be shaken unmercifully, and you don't know what you're going to get the next week Now, I understand if you yank him, that may be a confidence. That may take down your confidence, too.
He left him out there for 3 picks. And I know Coach Gruden knows in his mind that they have to play Seattle next week on Monday night. Why not sit him out for 3 picks? Go ahead and let Colt McCoy finish the game. Let Kevin Stroud get his mind right for the Monday night in Seattle. Now, he's going to go into that game thinking, oh, I threw 5 picks last game. Just putting unnecessary due pressure on Kirk Cousins, man. I just couldn't understand.
Yep, you're absolutely. What do you think about that, Jeff?
You know what? A lot of these coaches, they treat the quarterbacks with kid gloves. I think it's for a couple reasons. I think they don't want to have to deal with even the thought of a quarterback controversy, because if McCoy came in and looked decent, then everybody would be screaming, hey, play McCoy, you know, which as far as I'm concerned, you know, Johnny Manziel's the poor man's Michael Vick. Colt McCoy's the poor man's Johnny Manziel, you know. I mean, he's an okay backup for the NFL, but I don't think – you know, he's got the size of the arm or the talent to be a real starter in the league. But they're going through that with the Jets, you know. And Brian Billick is saying, you know, he said something to the effect, if they bench Geno, it's going to ruin his career. I think, Billick, you know, he's got excellent credentials. But come on, if benching Geno is going to ruin his career, then he's a bum, you know. I think the book is still out on him, but he hasn't looked good this year. Going into the season, I said, well, he looked good late last year, but, of course, they changed coordinators. So, I guess he had to relearn, and then they bring in Vic. And they kept saying, well, it's not a competition, and Vic is, you know, really grown up a lot, and he's said and done the right things. I'm pretty sure if they put Vic in, he would do a lot better than Geno. But the problem is, they don't have good wide receivers. They don't have a lot of talent to throw to, and Michael Vick will have issue with that, just like Geno. I've just liked Geno since like midway through his senior year at West Virginia, because. It was only 2 years ago. He went into the season as a legitimate Heisman candidate, and he packed it in about halfway through the season. He's a second-round pick, but it's not like he's a high first-round pick. I don't think, I don't know if they really wanted him to be the face of the franchise or whatever. And, of course you want to treat players right. And quarterback's different than other positions. You don't want to start some kind of carousel. But I think a lot of teams now are in the opposite thing. They just keep guys in there for too long during a game, too long during a season. But, that's their decision, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, the problem with, and since you were talking about Michael Vick and Geno Smith, is both of those guys, in my opinion, are turnovers waiting to happen. Geno, because I think of his inexperience, and Michael Vick, because of the type of arm he has, he thinks he can do a few things that... he's not capable of doing. He's a good quarterback, but he has a tendency to throw the ball where it shouldn't be thrown because of the type of arm he has. And so you can almost guarantee, just like Geno Smith, that Michael Vick will give you one or two turnovers a game. I agree with you. The psyche of a quarterback nowadays, these coaches are afraid of making some type of moves with quarterbacks because of hurting their fragile confidence. That I don't understand. Don't understand it. Grown-ass man. you either are able to do what you're supposed to do in the quarterback position or you're not. Plain and simple. If you're not, then you're sitting on the bench, you're a backup, or you're a third-string quarterback, and I'll get somebody else in there. And for the life of me, maybe it's because of the ego type of thing. Guys like Christian Ponder, like Jake Locker, guys like Blaine Gabbert, all these guys got drafted in the first round, I think probably in the same year. And all those guys are absolutely horrible, absolutely horrible. Christian Ponder is really the third-string quarterback. Blaine Gabbert is a backup. I think he's still with San Francisco. And Jake Locker, for the life of me, and I absolutely think he's a horrible quarterback, even though they do have a quarterback whisperer on that team, is, I mean, all that, as a coach, in Ken Whisenhunt. And he's gotten a little better out of Jake Locker. He's still hovering around the 50% completion range as a quarterback. And that's absolutely horrible. And can't stay healthy, for one. So the quarterback position is so, in the NFL, in a lot of these teams, is so scarce in talent that you float somebody out there that, in a normal situation, if you had a lot more talent in the quarterback position, they would be no more than, and some of these guys would be no more than a third-string quarterback, maybe a second string, not a starting quarterback. But because of whatever reason, ego, or you guys feel that they have no other choice but to play this guy because the front office doesn't want to look stupid and wants to push this guy on the head coach and tell the head coach and the offensive coordinator and the quarterback coach, you got to make this work or it's your job, not his, is, I don't know. I don't understand. Maybe somebody can explain it to me. Maybe somebody wants to get their opinion in here. And let me know if I'm missing something. What do you think, Jeff? Talk to me.
You know, I can't figure it out because in recent years there have been a lot of quarterbacks who've been good starters as rookies and, you know, seem to develop pretty quickly, like, you know, Flacco and Dalton and even Russell Wilson, who was a third-round mm-hmm. pick, and, you know, Dalton – you know, and there's been, you know, a fair amount of those guys. But then there's also, I think that might put pressure on some of these other guys who maybe shouldn't be starting as rookies. Because it used mm-hmm. to be years ago, they very rare to see a rookie quarterback start. And, you know, like Flacco, I don't think they wanted him to start his rookie year. He was a second-round pick from Delaware. But the two guys ahead of him got hurt, and, you know, he made the most of his opportunity. And never messed it up. He you know, he stayed healthy. He stayed productive. And then other teams see that, and then maybe they'll put in a guy who maybe wasn't as ready as Flacco, and the results aren't as good. It's hard to figure. I mean, you know, college football now, it's a lot more passing than it used to be, but it's a lot simpler passing game than NFL. I don't know, and this has only been for a couple of years now. Now with the new collective bargaining agreement, you don't get as much mini camps, you don't get as much training camp. That might hurt the development of the young quarterbacks. I can't figure it out, you know. You know, it's you know, it's always been very hard to predict what quarterbacks would be good in the NFL. There's always been bust, and there's always been guys found off the scrap heap, like Kurt Warner and Jeff Garcia, and meanwhile, and then of course, you know, and the bust are guys like Ryan Leaf, and it's you know, might be the hardest position to be able to predict success on the NFL level.
Black, your thoughts?
I have no idea. The quarterback is an exact science. I'm hearing word out that New England want to take a look at Garoppolo, but that's not really a true statement. I don't know, man. The quarterback is just it's not an exact science. You just got to throw a guy out there and see what he can do. But you don't hang a guy with five interceptions. You just don't do that, man.
Well, speaking of guy hanging a guy out there and see what he can do, talking about Mr. TB from New England looked absolutely horrible and hasn't put up decent fantasy points in the later part of last year leading into this year. Are we seeing a demise of Tom Brady or the demise of the New England Patriots, or is this just a phase that these guys are going through and they're going to turn it around? Jeff, your thoughts?
You know, Belichick has so much respect, and rightfully so. And, you know, earlier in Brady's career, he wasn't putting up monster numbers, but then when they brought in Randy Moss and Wes Welker, then, boom, his numbers were as good as Peyton Manning's. And then, you know, they lost Randy Moss, and then they lost Welker, but after they lost Moss, because Belichick, one of the reasons is he's successful as a coach is he's not stubborn, and he figures out, hey, we could have a good passing game with two tight ends, which nobody had really done that before. And then now the one tight end's in jail waiting for a trial for murder, and the other tight end's always hurt, and they're trying to figure out what kind of passing game. I mean, Julian Edelman is okay, number two receiver. Danny Amendola used to be one of these guys. When he's healthy, he's good. Now he's supposed to be healthy. I don't know what's wrong with him now. A lot of people thought maybe LaFell would be like the Brandon Lloyd breakout this year. I mean, he did look good at the end of the game on Monday night. But, you know, they asked Brady about retirement in the offseason. I don't think it's his fault, but I don't know if he wants to keep losing. I mean, he took less money so they could re-sign Welker, but they didn't re-sign Welker. And, you know, they trade away one of his best offensive linemen. But, you know, the Patriots have made trades like that before, and they usually work out. It's odd, but it might be the end of the Belichick-Brady era. You know, one of the great, successful head coach quarterback duos in NFL history.
Well, then, now this really bothers me, and you guys may want to comment on it. This really bothers me. Now, you got a franchise quarterback. You know the guy's playing well, and if he's got decent weapons, you know he's going to play that much better, and quite naturally, those better plays going to, for the most part, turn into wins. They ask the guy to take a pay cut so it can help improve the roster. And this is what bothers me. The sneakiness, in my opinion, of Bill Belichick, and it's mainly Bill Belichick because he's riding the whole show there, that he's had more than one person take a pay cut. His franchise quarterback, he asked to take a pay cut. And in my opinion, he lied to him. He underhanded thing, took a pay cut, and then let his best receiver, his most trusted receiver, and probably a good friend on the team in Tom Brady and Wes Welker, let him go. Just let him walk out the door because they didn't want to give him the money. And this is not the first time in that organization that is cheap. Regardless of how well Bill Belichick has been, ever since or past the three championships, he's gotten worse at letting players go and not paying the money to keep players, especially if players have a good relationship with their quarterback. Now, they got rid of Welker. Got rid of his trusted, and he's pretty close friend to Tom Brady in Mankins. His left tackle, all pro left tackle, and he trades him away because Mankins wouldn't take a pay cut. Now, did he not take a pay cut because he knew how underhanded Belichick is and how ruthless he is in holding back the money, and then didn't want to pay a veteran that is valuable to him and his quarterback? Or he saw him for what he was, take a pay cut for the team, but it's really not for the team. It's just I'm going to cut corners any way I can. Now, I know it's a business move. I know that. But you can cut off your nose to spite your face also. And I think that's what he's done because the team has gotten progressively harder to, especially at the tail end of last season and into this season, harder to manufacture points. And their defense is not the offense is not a strong suit, and then neither is it really the defense getting torched. And they had Brandon Browner who's coming back. And they had Darrell Revis, who's not the same Darrell Revis, obviously. I know I ranted on for a while because I want to get all that out before I ask Black your thoughts.
What exactly is he saving money for, though? That's what I'm trying to figure out. You trade Mankins for a tight end who's no good.
Right.
You let her welcome walk to bring in the walking wounded known as Amendola. Who knows when he'll play?
Right.
I don't understand what Belichick is doing. I think sometimes he's a football genius, but sometimes he just outsmarts himself. That offensive line is horrible. They had like 5, 6, 7 combinations that last game they tried to try it out there, and nothing worked. Nothing worked. I don't know what they're saving money for. What is the big thing to save the money? Why are they being so cheap?
I don't know what to tell you. Your thoughts, Jeff? Your thoughts.
There's been the past few years, the Patriots have drafted wide receivers, passed up on some good ones, and the guys they picked didn't work out. And, drafting is not easy. Even if you're great at it, you're going to goof once in a while. But they weren't able to draft any good receivers. As far as being cheap, I think there is a salary minimum in the NFL. The Jets are getting criticized for that because they were $20 million under the cap. Everybody
yep.
said they needed to improve at receiver, to improve at corner. They didn't. And already, that's been the story of their season. They stink at receiver. They stink at corner. What were they thinking not spending that $20 million? And now there's even talk that the ownership doesn't want Rex to sit Geno. I think Rex said something about it, then he took it back. If you're not going to let him sit Geno, then don't fire the guy when they only win 4 games at the end of the year, you know? But,
right.
I guess this is how dysfunctional organizations work.
Yeah, speaking of that, they had asked Rex, I don't know if you heard about this, they asked Rex, is it, and I don't know the exact wording, is it you that will sit the Geno if he needs to sit? And he kept on saying it's an organizational decision. And me, from what I'm saying, when I'm listening to that, it means he doesn't have the authority to sit Geno in a game. So if he's sitting there and he sees his quarterback, just like last week, absolutely horrible, or even this week coming up, and he sees him, he's absolutely horrible, what, he got to call up to Isaac and ask him, can I sit him now? He can't make that decision? Because that's what it sounded like to me. He cannot make that decision. So it's an organizational decision, and if that's the case, the GM should be the head coach because, obviously, the head coach can't make that decision. Am I right in assuming that, Jeff, or what?
Yeah, that's the impression I get, and the Jets are dysfunctional. They bring in Isaac, but they make them keep Rex. Most GMs want to bring in their own guy. So I don't think that's a good working relationship. Eventually they're going to fire Rex, and then Isaac will bring in his own guy. I think the ownership might have liked Rex when he was, he was good at getting the media attention, which is something I think that team is always looking after because I think they're unsuccessfully trying to compete with the Giants. They've done a better job of winning headlines than winning games. But you know, this is football, and it, you got to win games. And believe me, they win games. Their popularity will take care of itself, you know. I don't know. But last year, I think it was because Idzik, they made Rex tone down his act, and it was like for a while last year, it seemed like Rex wasn't even himself. It just goes to show you what guys will do to keep their jobs, you know. Very, very strange situations there.
That's exactly why last year, when it was last year, year before, whatever it was, it was time to go in a different direction. Just like a head coach sees a quarterback not doing over and over the things that he wants him to do, it's time to go in a different direction. It was time to go in a different direction. It's played out ever since I made that move, and I'm glad I did, and I have no regrets. Anybody that disparages me, that's fine. I feel better going to sleep making that decision.
Oh, after Sunday, you'll regret that decision, my friend.
Why is that? You really think so there, Black?
If we see what our game plan and what we're doing, fine. After I've been screaming at the top of my lungs all these years to run the damn football, now we have the number one rushing attack in the league. If we can keep that going, you will win the Swiss team after Sunday, my friend.
Oh, boy. Do I hear a Dallas Cowboy pumping their chest out and shouting from the rafters? Do I hear that?
Just for the Texans. You know we can't stand the Texans, and the Texans can't stand that.
It's an interstate rivalry, man. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
Just make sure you have your cell phone next to you, Black. That's all I can tell you.
I'll see you Saturday at the fight. So I'm coming up to New Jersey. I'll be in Atlanta City. might have my cowboy shirt on. Who knows?
Oh, boy. Anyway, let me see. What else are we going to talk about here? 7-0 Green Bay and the Minnesota Vikings are in for a long night because Christian Ponder is doing what Christian Ponder does. Absolutely
yeah,
nothing.
I don't even know why he's out playing tonight. I have no clue why he's not here.
Well, he's out there because Matt Castle is on the IR and Bridgewater's ankle wasn't good enough to play. So that's why Ponder's out there, and they activated a quarterback from the practice squad to back him up. So if Ponder gets knocked out of the game, it's done, you know, because practice squad quarterbacks don't get reps with the first team offense usually.
You never know. It might look like Austin Davis from the Rams. You saw what Ponder does. Reps from Ponder back out there.
God comes out there with nothing to lose and starts throwing a ball all over the field and making plays because nobody's got any game tape on them. So you never know. you never know.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen, yeah.
I'm not confident it will, but stranger things have happened before. And this is football, and this is probably a pretty crazy season. Who would have thought the Patriots would have got toasted like they did last week, and Brady looked absolutely horrible. But you saw the handwriting on the wall the week before when he barely put up 10 points in fantasy and barely won the game, I think it was against the Oakland Raiders. So,
what's your guys' thoughts on Garoppolo up there in New England?
Jeff, I'll let you take that first.
I don't really know too much about him. I don't get the impression he's the savior of the franchise. but you never know. And they really, you know, except for the one season where Brady was injured, you know, his backups almost never get to play. You know, Castle went 11-5, but that was back when they had Randy Moss and Wes Welker. But other than that, his backups really hold the clipboard. And they say, you know, Brady's the kind of person, he wants all the reps in practice. You know, he doesn't want the backups getting any reps. And, you know, it's part of his personality, whatever. But I don't think Brady's the problem. I don't. I think it's bigger than that. It's a team problem.
Well, check this out. Ryan Mallett, rookie contract, was up after this year. So that means he'll probably be looking for a decent bump up in salary one way or the other. Garoppolo, when they grabbed him, I think he's in the third round or whatever, is a cheap quarterback. Is a cheap quarterback. So would you rather have a cheap quarterback, a rookie cheap quarterback that you can keep on your roster for another 3 years or whatever, 4 years, at the same salary, or have a quarterback that you got who's coming off a rookie quarterback that you're probably going to have to bump up, and that's just this fall right back into this cheap Belichick attitude that I'll get rid of the quarterback that I'm probably going to have to pay a little bit more to and get a draft pick for, and I'll get my – I already drafted my cheap backup quarterback, and we'll go on from there. So he may be – I think he's a decent quarterback, to tell you the truth. And he's got a decent coordinator, not the, probably the best, but a decent coordinator that –
Whoa.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And Jordy Nelson.
Wow. A decent quarterback that quarterback coach or offensive coordinator who can groom my cheap young quarterback for when Tom Brady, and that's not, I don't think that's too far off, is going to go bye-bye. So Mr. Belichick is not that stupid, but very, very frugal and ruthless when it comes to paying players, especially veteran players, and would rather have younger players with cheap contracts, and when it's time for them to get paid, trade them off for some draft picks and get some new players with some more cheap contracts. So
I'm starting to think that he has a coaching clause that if he keeps the salary cap under a certain number, that he'll get a bonus at the end of the season. That guy is just being too cheap, man. You can't be that cheap in the NFL. You can't be.
Well, I totally agree with you, Black. But it is what it is. It is what it is. And I know I've been on Patriots and Belichick's for the last almost 10 minutes, but the demise of a Hall of Fame quarterback is not easy to see, and I think it's not going to get any better anytime soon. The offensive line's in shambles. The wide receiving core is definitely in shambles.
They get absolutely zero separation.
Yeah, I don't know. The look on Tom Brady in that game looked like total disgust and really not knowing what to do, and just happened to sit there and take it. You know, like I said, you know he's got to be steaming, pissed off, and he should go behind closed doors, go to Belichick's, look, give me some effing players. Jesus, come on. I took a pay cut, and you do me like this? You know, but he's been groomed to listen to the head coach, and also brainwashed, but in a sense, yeah, that the coach is a coach, and I'll do what I'm told and keep my mouth shut. Well, you're Tom Brady. I understand that Belichick is a very good coach, and I understand you're grateful because he gave you the opportunity and you won several Super Bowls with him. But you're Tom Brady. He didn't do it. You did it. You got the clout to go in there and say, look, you got to do something here. You can't you got to do something. I don't know. I mean, Belichick in the press conference, this past press conference, they kept asking him about the past game, and it was, we're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati. Wouldn't answer one question. Stoic face like he always has when he talks to the press. We're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati. That game's passed. We're on to Cincinnati. We got to worry about Cincinnati. So it's not going to change. Plain and simple. It's obvious it's not going to change. Patriots fans, Bill Belichick fans, Tom Brady fans, you may be in for a very long season. And the AFC East is up for grabs. Who's going to take it? Because look at the teams in there. Look at the teams and the quarterbacks in there. Ryan Tannehill, whose head coach won't even endorse him as the starting quarterback. E.J. Manuel, who just got benched for Kyle Orton. And Geno Smith, who's absolutely horrible in himself. And Tom Brady, who for the last couple of weeks at least has been looking like Jake Locker. Inaccurate, making bad throws, interceptions all over the place, fumbling the ball. You got to be kidding me. You guys, answer me this. Who is going to win the AFC East? Jeff.
Ooh. You know, it could be an 8-8 team. You know, nobody really jumps out. And I've been saying forever, they got to move Miami to the AFC South, then move Indianapolis to the AFC North, and then move Baltimore to the East, right? Isn't that where everybody would fit? But, you know, the Colts, they really want to stay in that AFC South, but who cares? Look at a map, you know? I never understood that. I mean, the NFL finally realigned, which they needed to do, but they needed to make that three-way switch, so...
Yeah. Well, guys, we come to the end of the show. I'm going to go Black first, then Jeff, myself, to close this show out. Talk to me, Black.
Oh, well, congrats to my Nationals. Finished with the best record. And we're going into this division championship with the Giants, I believe, tomorrow at 3:07. I'll be there to sit and watch and see what we do as we make this World Series run. But, Master, I'll see you Saturday night, Atlantic City, Bally. So we can play against some boxing, my friend.
Okay. Jeff.
I'm more of an NFL fan, but I watch some college. I know Black likes college football. I'll tell you, one thing that's starting to irritate me about college football, they got to start having better games in September because there's way too many out-of-conference games that are mismatches. There's too many of that. And they got to find a way to the Big Five schools, they shouldn't be playing out-of-conference with these small schools and whatever. And they got to find a way to make better September games for college football. I don't get it, and I don't enjoy it. And it's going to be historic. I think it's tomorrow, Saturday. Michigan is coming to Rutgers, the two oldest college football programs. And I don't understand Michigan. They just can't seem to hire the right guy for head coach.
I'm calling for your Rutgers team to do that tomorrow.
You know, I mean, Rutgers isn't that great, but, you know, Michigan has looked pretty poor. There might be a riot in Michigan if they lose to Rutgers. And I really think Harbaugh might go to Michigan. And there have been guys to leave the NFL for college. I think Al Groh did, and there have been some others. Ray Perkins did it. And if they pay Harbaugh enough, he's got enough ego and he's crazy enough that he'll go take the Michigan job, because that's an elite school. It's not like he'd be leaving the NFL to, you know, coach some Division III school or something. So I really think he might not be the kind of guy who likes to stay in one place for too long. I could definitely see him going to Michigan, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, turning it around, and then coming back to the NFL for even more money. So there's been a lot of talk about Harbaugh this week. So everybody have a good weekend.
All right. You guys, thanks for joining me. Thanks for the conversation. Tune in next week, people. 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, same place on a Thursday night. And we'll be talking about fantasy sports and politics. That's what we do with the Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. With that being said, we're out.
Let me one quick.
Yeah. Go ahead, Black. I'm sorry.
Oh, one quick thing. I noticed he didn't call in tonight, but Vic the God, prepare yourself for a slaughter.
Excuse me. Say that again.
I said, I know he didn't call in tonight, but Vic the Gardner wanted to prepare himself for a slaughter of fantasy football.
I know you know his text, so I'm pretty sure you'll send some correspondence to that effect. Everybody, take care. Have a good weekend. Good luck in your fantasy. Good luck there, Black. See ya.
Yeah. Mr. Encore, Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, log on.